All right, tonight we find out if the Edmonton Oilers can turn 5-6. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, Derek Brandeo, Jake the Snake Schultz, pushing all the right buttons upstairs for us, guys. Thank you very much. It's the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. We are live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary, and watching on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet Plus. This hour, Real Kipper and Bourne is brought to you by Bet365. All right, where's the vibe here? Has to be a lot better than it was a few years ago when teams didn't come back from 3-0 deficits. Yeah. Didn't matter if it was Stanley Cup final or in the first round. There seems to be, for me, a different vibe of 3-0. It's not bulletproof anymore.
No. It's actually, I don't have the stat in front of me, but I did see a stat that this playoff season and last year was the first time it's been back-to-back years with only one sweep in playoffs going back, 80 years, whatever. It's been a long time.
That was in the lineup yesterday.
Was it? Yes. Thank you. Yeah. So not as many sweeps. Teams are pretty equal. But this is Gary's parody era.
Sammy's not buying it at all. He thinks it's over in five.
I do, yeah. I think much like what that just happened in the NBA Finals, where they're very mirroring themselves, it's just, it's hard to have that, you're on the last game of a long road trip. It's hard to have that killer instinct. You're thinking about where you're going to be going out after, all this stuff that's coming into play there.
And you go back home and you're like, okay,
refocus,
we got to do this.
They're great on home ice. They're the better team. I want six. I want this baby to keep going, but I really don't feel like it's going to.
In a few minutes, we'll welcome in the 15th winningest coach in NHL history, Claude Julien, of course, of fame, Stanley Cup championship in Boston, but also another one as a member of the Boston Bruins, where 2010, he watched his Bruins blow a 3-0 lead to the Philadelphia Flyers. So it'll be interesting to get his perspective on the thoughts of Edmonton still coming back and making this a series.
If you go over to sportsnet.ca, you can check out my article today on a roadmap back for Edmonton and, what has to go right, what could go right. We talked a little bit about it yesterday, but I think Florida's a better team as well, like incrementally. And I think beating them four straight times.
Where did you
really
start
hard.
Your conversation or your article on where's the first left or right turn?
For me, it's
on the road.
It's Florida's best players being off. Barkov, first game after taking a hit to the noggin, was not very good. And Bennett, a little bit hurt. Tkachuk. By the way, Renaud Lavoie yesterday on our show just skimmed over the fact that he's like, Matthew Tkachuk has a fractured sternum, and he just carried on.
Oh, that was from last year.
Oh, is that
from
last year?
Yeah.
I was like, okay,
against
is that
Vegas.
What it is this year? Yeah. But so their best players look hurt to me. And that's what Edmonton needs. A crack, a window, an opening where.
So you think that shellacking has been led because you see a team that might be physically not right?
A little bit of that, a little bit of what Sammy's talking about, where it's, the mental aspect of things. But there's so many things that, that I wrote about where the Oilers, when they've lost three games in a row this season, have come back and won huge streaks. Sammy's got it here. November, they went 5-0 after losing three in a row. In December, they went 16-0 after losing three straight. And then in February, they went.
It's a remarkable stat.
This team gets hot. They get really hot at times. Skinner, good at the end of series. McDavid's going. Hyman and Draisaitl haven't even started to chip in. I'm just saying that there's a roadmap where things, if they get some bounces, Florida's going to be awesome tonight. But if Edmonton gets by tonight and they go back to that building.
I think there is.
It's all about tonight.
If I'm an Oilers fan and there's one thing I'm looking at, it's the stat that I put in there.
Yeah.
About how they have turned it around after losing multiple games in a row under Chris Knobloch. I want to call him Chuck Knobloch all the time.
The Minnesota Twins and
Yankee.
New York Yankee.
It drives me crazy. But no, I really do think that would be the thing I'm looking at. But 3-0 series leads, I don't want to miss Mr. Poo-Poo here, but 3-0 series leads happen all the time, and all of us always talk ourselves into it, and then in game five or game six, it ends, and we're all like, well, that was probably always going to happen.
Yes.
So maybe this is different.
No.
Oilers may be different.
You're probably right.
Anyways.
You're right. It's just there's an opening.
There might be a possibility of Evander Kane. Anything updated on that, Sammy?
Yeah,
if Kane comes in.
In the tweets I saw, it didn't sound like he was going to play.
It was a possibility yesterday. I think he was on the ice today.
With the extras. I think he was on with the extras.
But this is like another piece of encouragement that you get by one more game. You give him three more days.
Because
then this series will finish by the fall. He'll be ready by then.
Going home.
Going
for
home.
For possible six.
You know, like there's just this momentum.
Are you surprised that the power plays haven't played an issue here? And I know that the penalty killing's been excellent. And the Oilers continue to be on this torrid run.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about some elite talent on both sides.
Yeah,
Sam Reinhart's been unbelievable on the power play, but it's been a non-factor in this Stanley Cup final.
It's more surprising that the Oilers only have one through five games, right? Like, this is a team that over the last 5 years has the best power play, them and Tampa Bay, I think, by leaps and bounds. So, yeah, I know they're saying the things like, poster or crossbar different here or there, and we could be talking about how good it is, which that's loser talk.
Sounds like the Leafs.
Yeah, it does. So hopefully they just shoot a couple in the net and they don't have to give the almost talk, because almost talks doesn't convince anyone. But at some point, I do expect Sam Reinhart to show up as well.
Yeah.
How important is the first goal here?
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like in game four, at least, when Tarasenko scored to make it 2-1, that it was going to be a close game.
Yeah.
And it never materialized. But the 2-0 put Florida on their heels.
Makes them open up a bit, right? If you can make them open up.
Huge difference.
Yeah.
Huge difference. All right. Let's get into that topic and more with Claude Julien. Thanks for joining us, Claude. Really appreciate your time as always. And maybe you're one of the best voices we could hear right now. That might have something to do with the challenge of a 3-0 deficit, as you were a part of one in 2010, unfortunately on the wrong side here. But maybe you can draw some parallels for us in terms of what you felt being up 3-0, and maybe what Florida felt like Saturday night being up 3-1, and then the seed of doubt in game five.
Well, let's put it this way. Not only were we up 3-0 in the series, but even game seven, we were up 3-0 in the game and they came back to beat us. So really, it was a tough time for our group and tough time for our team. But as you know, the following year, we certainly made up for it. But no, you get up 3-0 and no matter.
Oh, no, no.
We lost him.
I think he might have frozen.
I do remember the up 3-0 in game seven thing. It was like, God, Philly came all this way back just to go down, like, you know, without a fight. And then, yeah, there was some significant fight.
He went frozen there.
What's that?
Bad line by me, I guess. I couldn't control
yeah, the Sammy didn't stitch it together well enough.
It's been very rare for us. So there you go.
So if I recall also, the Boston Bruins lost game five. Much like Edmonton, where it was like a convincing loss.
Yeah. I don't think it means nothing when the other team shows you they can beat the living daylights out of you. You know, like it's not like sneaking by. They can put it together and be a fantastic team. So I don't know. What when you played was the closest experience to something like this? You guys have a lead either way.
Our Stanley Cup final, we were up 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't 3-0,
yeah.
But it was a very comfortable feeling.
Until it isn't.
To the point where Stanley Cup parades were being planned.
Yeah, by you guys.
No, by the city.
By literal people, planners.
Mayor
the
Giuliani.
The actual cup was being planned, yeah.
Hardly recognizable.
a little different than those days.
In those days.
Yeah.
But it was like a few distractions, and then it goes 3-2. You go to Vancouver, much like I think people would be feeling if Edmonton wins tonight.
Yeah.
Is, God, if this thing comes back home, it's going back to Florida for game seven.
Yeah. I remember watching that closely. Kelowna boy, you know, not too far from Vancouver. Well, fairly far, but whatever. We were, you know, Team BC rooting against you as much as we could in the West Coast. Like, there was a lot of drama there, and you could feel could feel the momentum start for the Canucks where you go, okay, there's a chance, there's a window. That's where the Oilers are at right now, hanging on to that hope. And yeah, I think game seven, you know, never know what could happen. Six in Edmonton, like Edmonton's chances, it's all about tonight.
We're just calling Claude back.
All right.
We're having a tough time getting the internet monster got him. So,
hey, listen, it's been a pretty good year for that.
I know.
I actually don't think we've dropped a call, anybody. I guess.
No. That. So we're about to test it again. I'm calling him. So that's good. But was there a moment in the game seven where somebody hit a post or like, I assume
Nathan Lafayette.
Oh, yeah.
Hit a post with about three or four minutes to go, or else that game seven's going into overtime.
Oh, my God.
Sickening.
Yeah, I'm sure the Vancouver Canuck fans listening right now and on Sportsnet 650 are thrilled to hear about
Nathan Lafayette
hitting the post and over late in that game. But, I mean, that's the thing, these thin margins. And okay, there we go.
All right, Claude, welcome back, buddy.
Thanks, guys. I think I got a tired computer here. So
either that or the up or down 3-0 gods got you on it. Just in terms of when, as a coaching staff, do you feel like when you're watching this momentum swing, you know, and over the course of four games, when does it become less about X's and O's and more about emotion or passion or belief or disbelief? Like, where does the coaching staff go for Paul Maurice tonight?
Well, I don't know if he should be a real word right now, but you know, at the end of the day, I think if Edmonton wins this game tonight, I would be one of those betting guys that would say it's going to go to seven, because as you know, you gain momentum, and as the other team goes, you've just lost your second game and that one at home, so you got to go back to, you know, the enemy's territory, and you know that Edmonton and that situation, which is what we had talked about, was that we're going to go there with some momentum, make sure we win in front of our fans. And then that was kind of the situation a little bit in Vancouver, that we get to play game seven, and game seven can go either way. So, you know, it's a big belief for Edmonton, especially if they win this game tonight. But for Florida, you have to think that, you know, honestly, it's a must win. You want to stop the hemorrhaging, if you can call it that. And you want to make sure that you end it tonight. So they've got a great opportunity, I guess, to win it in front of their fans. But if not, this could change drastically.
Claude, how does the pressure change once everyone looks at you and go, okay, now you're supposed to win? You know, like, that's, to me, what Florida's facing, where this was two pretty good teams. They probably had a slight edge. But everything at one point became like, okay, Florida, now you're supposed to be the team who gets it done. Does that start to make things harder?
Well, again, it's a mind game at this stage, right? Yeah. And it's how they're going to approach it. As far as I'm concerned, like tonight, their focus has to be, as a team, to say, listen, let's just go out there, play the best game we've played throughout the playoffs. Get yourself in a mindset that's very positive, very focused, and understand that you got to do the right things in order to win. And the best thing you can do in these kind of games is not look at the end result, but look at the process you got to go through in order to get the end results that you're looking for. And that's what I think in Paul Maurice's situation, he's got to get his team focused on, what do we have to do here tonight in order to win? Let's not look at the end result, but honestly, the process that we're going to go through, whether it's having a great start, getting through the first period, trying to score the first goal, playing with the lead, all these kind of things have to be in their minds as they get ready to play tonight's game.
Claude, in your heyday, you had a terrific depth line, if I'm not mistaken. Gregory Campbell, Sean Thornton, and
Daniel Paille.
Yeah.
And now we're watching the Edmonton Oilers with the likes of Henry, Connor Brown, Ryan McLeod. Like, how instrumental do these guys have to be for Edmonton to truly, truly get this to game seven?
Well, I think it's really important, I think, Kipper, because, you know, these guys, have to help out the top players. And, you know, everybody's always talking about the same guy, Draisaitl, McDavid, et cetera. And these guys here made the difference to me in the last game by producing and then making the other team aware that there's more than just a couple of players on that team that can do the damage. And they can certainly change the momentum. You talked about that line of ours that we had, our fourth line. And believe it or not, when I didn't have the last change in Vancouver, I remember Alain Vigneault sending the Sedin brothers against that line at times, and they just handled themselves so well. They were actually hemming them in their own end because of their work ethic and you know, putting pucks in deep and forechecking. So that made a big difference in our game and certainly allowed our other lines to be able to produce and play against lines that maybe they had more success against. So they do play a big role, and I think that's something that Edmonton's fourth line can do for them. I saw at times that they were up against some of the top players from Florida, and they handle themselves well. It's all about, you know, commitment, your work ethic. Keep your game simple. Dump it in and try and hem them in their own end. Get them frustrated by playing it in their own end instead of going on the attack.
So how much, you know, what's a coach's role in this? When you know, you get up 3-0, everything you've done has worked perfectly, and you know, I imagine when things go wrong the first time, there's not some desire to change. You've been having success. How much do you have to talk yourself into changing things? Or is it a matter of, I know we've won 3 games doing this, I'm not changing now?
Well, you know, what I have to think about the last game is that, you know, obviously they were up 3-0, and you guys probably talked about it. But, you know, they're going into that game saying, you know what, we just have to play well. We'll win that game. I don't think they were actually as focused and as committed and determined as they were in those first 3 games. So I have to think this was a bit of a wake-up call for them, for Florida. And obviously the mistake they made is by maybe not having that same intensity. They just gave Edmonton some life and some belief. And that's the dangerous part of, you know, not closing in after 3 games. So now you're going back home, and I think they realize now the importance of this game tonight. But at the same time, they've got a team coming in that's believing and knows that if they win this game in Florida, they're going back home with a lot of momentum. So I think it's one of those things where they realize the mistake they made. It's too late, but now it's up to them to try and make up for it tonight.
Okay. Claude, take me back to the series that you lost to Florida or Philadelphia, and your goalies were Tuukka Rask and who else did you have? Was it Tim Thomas?
It was Tim Thomas.
Okay.
That was Tim Thomas, actually.
Okay.
You're right.
And just in terms of how you handled, you know, watching a 3-0 lead, you know, disintegrate, and when you thought maybe you'd approach them, talk to them, not talk to them, video them, goalie coaching him. Like, how does, not that I'm suggesting that Paul Maurice is all over Bobrovsky today, but at some point in your series, how did you handle the goaltending situation knowing that a 3-0 lead was lost?
Well, you know, to be honest with you guys, our situation was a little bit different. And if you look back at some of the stuff that happened there, we were up 3-0 and going into Philly and game 4, I think we were doing well. And then David Krejci broke his wrist in that game. And we had already had quite a few injuries that we were battling through, guys that were out. And so that really, with Krejci's injury, really put us in a tough spot. And our hope at that point was just, let's try and win this next game here as quick as we can. But, you know, Philadelphia just took over. And then, and as I mentioned earlier, you win one game, you got belief. They came back to Boston, beat us. But as a coach, you're right. All you're trying to do is get these guys focused, try and stay the course, even though, like, as a coaching staff, we're talking about, you know, how are we going to handle all these things here? It wasn't just a goaltending. It was really, we felt that we had lost some key players at that point, and we need to get through it. And as I mentioned earlier, I don't know if I got cut off before, but we were even up 3-0 in game 7 at home. and we let that lead slip away, and we lost game seven. So a lot of it has to be on us, and I think a lot of it was, you know, doubt crept in, and as much as we tried to, you know, get through it, for some reason it didn't work out. And the only thing I can say about all that was that it was an unbelievable lesson for us to learn the following year, and we made sure not to make that mistake again.
So how do you, as a coach who's never won a Stanley Cup, I believe, going into 2011, like, control the energy, going into the room, presenting to the team, trying not to, I imagine, present yourself as too excited? Well, what sort of steps did you take to keep yourself in the present moment and not start to think about what it would be like to win?
Well, I think it's the players read a lot off the coaches, and this is where, again, not to get off the question here, but this is where I think Knobloch has done a pretty good job for a first-year coach. Paul Maurice has the experience. You can see they're both pretty calm behind that bench, and, you know, that reflects on the rest of your team, and I think this is what we tried to do, especially, as you mentioned there, we go into Game 7 of a series. The players are really going to read off the coaches. If the coaches look nervous, if they look overly excited, they're going to read off you guys. So I think this is where, as a coaching staff, not just the head coach, but we got to show composure. We got to show that we're well prepared and that everything's under control, and let the guys kind of not relax, but feel that preparedness in your staff and know that we've covered everything and we're ready to go here. I think that's an important part of it. The minute panic, or even during the game, you know, if one of those coaches starts screaming or panicking a little bit, especially after how far they've gone and how they've conducted themselves so far, the players are going to read right off that. So I think it's important. And again, I give credit to such a calm person back there for a guy who came in halfway through the year.
Well, we'll see what kind of composure we get out from both sides tonight. Claude, really appreciate you joining us. Just one last thought on who wins tonight.
Well, like everybody else, being a Canadian, I'm hoping that Edmonton can pull this off here, and going to be cheering for them. And I think there's a real good possibility there. And as I mentioned, they pull that one off, I think there's a really good chance we see a game seven.
You know what? I read a stat today that said that there's been 20 coaching changes in 13 months. So I really like the chances of you coming back and coaching in the NHL again.
Well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate that.
We look forward to you coming back on when you're head coach.
All right, buddy.
That sounds good.
Thank you, Claude.
Thanks, Claude. Appreciate
Claude Julien, Stanley Cup champion, and a guy who's been on the wrong side of a 3-0 deficit.
And then they win the Stanley Cup the next year.
Had to have been like the driving force.
That frustration.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny, a lot of these teams that win President's Trophies, then lose early, win the Cup the next year. That there's like a bit of a thread of those teams, and I think there's something to be said for having a disappointing loss and spending a whole offseason going not again and building towards something going into the next season.
I was just looking at that series where they came back, the 3-0 deficit. Game four went to overtime, 5-4 loss in overtime, and then they lost 4-0 in the game five, like you said, and then 2-1 game six, and then 4-3 game seven. So overtime game. So
there's always overtimes and comebacks.
And game five, which we are entering tonight, in that series, I think the Bruins got shut out in game five.
4-0.
Right? 4-0. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's almost as bad as being throttled 8-1.
Yeah, it's right? But to me, that also it demonstrated a team that could play with them, right? Like the bad team doesn't mop a team 4-0 in the postseason.
But there's that psychological kind of hit, and that's what I like the most about Edmonton's win. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just a win to get them to 3-1. It was a win that said, like, we finally got what we deserved. We're a better team. We're a faster
team.
Well,
and McDavid has a 4-point night, so his stats look good in the finals. Like, he's not pressing anymore.
So many other messages besides just the W in that game.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if Florida goes down 1 or 2-0 in the first period.
Right. This is where breaks in hockey matter.
Is this going to end up just being an extension of that momentum now fully into the first period tonight?
Who's going to hit the inside of a post and have it not go in the first few minutes? Like, and it's going to matter.
How about that game five shutout was a shared shutout between... between Brian Boucher and Michael Layton. So I guess Michael Layton got hurt halfway through the game, and Brian Boucher comes in and finishes it.
I don't mean any disrespect to Brian Boucher, but those Flyers teams were all so good, and they just never had great goals.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't this the team that got in on the last day of the year?
This was Jeff Carter and Mike Richards, too, right, before they went to L.A.?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they got in on the last day of the year. Remember that shootout? Maybe you guys don't remember, but...
Not that part, no.
I remember Olli Jokinen got stopped by Brian Boucher, poke check, and they got into the dance that way, and they went on to do that.
Okay, Jokinen was playing for who then?
The Panthers.
Oh.
It was the last of the year. I just remember the stupidest stuff. But anyways.
I like that stuff.
They're really hoping for the repeat performance of the Philadelphia Flyers.
I'm interested to see both goalies tonight. I still got to think Stuart Skinner should feel somewhat more relaxed than Bobrovsky, if that makes any sense at all, despite his inexperience.
What's Skinner got to lose? He's 25. You know,
I would think that that's the way he would feel right now.
Yeah, like they've had a pretty good season one way or the other. He's an 8.98. He's not been like a 700 or anything. But he's played fine.
But this close to the league one average. That has to close this thing out tonight.
The numbers for Stu Skinner facing elimination this year in the playoffs have been very good. He's 3-0, 133 goals against, and a .938 save percentage facing elimination this year. So he's had a nice performance in that aspect. So.
Really just building this up for the Oilers to, you know. No, well, I mean, they've got to, you know, this whole, it ain't over, I think is the message of the day. Are you going to give us game time?
Yeah, let's do game time.
All right.
It's game time. Presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. So the Florida Panthers tonight are pretty big favorites. -150 on the money line. The Edmonton Oilers are +125. Bet365 is really thinking that the Panthers end it tonight. If I was going to bet on this hockey game tonight,
yes,
I might go Florida -1.5. I think there's a world where this is very similar to the NBA Finals. I know they don't like it when we bring up NBA during the NHL hour here, but people get sour. And they do.
Beat it, people.
But I just, like I said off the top, you know, you get the split in Edmonton. You win one of those games there. You win the game you need to win.
Mm-hmm.
That game four, it's just such a write-off. You're thinking about where you're going to go after all the stuff that goes into winning the cup, your first chance to win the cup. You're a little bit squirrely. First one in franchise history. Goes back to Florida. And they win. And they win. And they win big.
Today is that you now have the Panthers' attention. You have their full attention.
For sure. I just.
Undivided at home.
+180 for -1.5 to me to win by more than one. Is a really good number for the Florida Panthers tonight. Yeah. Sorry, Edmonton.
Like, first goal.
First goal.
Yeah. Comes down to the first goal for you.
For me, it just has a big vibe.
Right. If all of a sudden Florida's like, oh no, is this happening? You know, can you put that in their head? Can you put uh-oh in their head tonight is the challenge.
Just a quick little same game parlay here. It's +350. Edmonton Oilers money line. Connor McDavid to score a goal and over 2.5 goals for the Edmonton Oilers. If you think it's going to happen, probably going to have to be some goals in the game. Connor McDavid's probably going to have to be involved. So there's a quick one for you as well. And that was Game Time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds to find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
You know, in the last 14 games, the Oilers' penalty kill is 97.6%.
Yeah, it's
40 of 41.
It's
special teams, boys.
Thank you.
That's what it comes down to.
It's impressive. Like, it's... Sometimes you can just go, okay, it's just a matter of time, or they're getting some lucky breaks, but, man, they haven't given much up.
No.
That, what I've seen anyways.
One more stat before we go. Games 1-3, Stu Skinner, 4-8, 328 GAA, 868 save percentage. Games 4-7, 8-0, 138, 944.
Interesting.
Not saying.
I mean, that's a pretty big sample size. 8-0, that's pretty good.
Games 4-7.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we return, we'll get into some NHL news and notes. Craig Conroy spoke with Who do you speak with on Sportsnet.ca?
I don't know. I think we rattled them.
Yeah,
it was Francis.
Eric Francis.
Yeah, I think our conversation yesterday may have spurred this on.
On Markstrom. Mm-hmm. So we'll have a conversation on that. Also, the New York Rangers clearing some cap space with a
two-time Stanley Cup
pretty
champion.
Pretty significant name.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that plus more when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Why do you give me a piece of chocolate right before I come back on air?
We needed a blood sugar spike. We needed a little... get us going here.
We are lucky here because we found Bill Lindsay. Of course, he's getting ready for game five, but he's got a couple minutes just to kind of tee us up on the vibe in South Florida. Bill, how are you, man? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Everything is good. It's a beautiful day with the rains are gone. Nice and hot, sunny.
All right. So give us the goods here, Bill. I mean, is there some nervousness there? Is 3-1 still fairly comfortable for you? How surprised were you that not only did Florida lose, but how they lost Saturday night 8-1?
No, they're still fairly comfortable. The situation going back home for game five, I expected fully at some point in this series that McDavid and Draisaitl would explode at some point. It's impossible. We held them pretty much contained the first three games. These are players that average a couple of points a game throughout the playoffs and regular season, whatever it is. There's going to be a point that it breaks, and the dam broke in game number four, and the Panthers got caught 2-on-1s, 3-on-2s. That's not really what happens to this Panther team. The one thing that stood out in this series that didn't happen against the Rangers, against Boston, or against Tampa Bay is just from the analytics side, they flipped it a little bit, has Edmonton the zone time pressure. So if the Panthers really want to get into this and win game number five, they kind of have to get back into their DNA with that forechecking pressure, screens in front, low to high plays, extended shifts in the offensive zone, putting pressure on Edmonton. If not, game five could turn out to be rather interesting in its own right.
Bill, the players are not allowed to talk or think about something like, what if they won a Stanley Cup? But tell us about what it would look like in Florida if the Panthers win a Stanley Cup. What would they do? Do you know the parade route? What's it look like in Florida if it happens?
You're trying to jinx them.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know if it's going to be down the Intercoastal on boats or if it's going to be down A1A and towards Fort Lauderdale. I imagine one of those two options. You would either be cruising down A1A on the beach
with Vanilla Ice,
with everyone there on the side waving, and then maybe have a stage set up somewhere or do it down the Intercoastal on boats. There's options. Let's put it that way. They're looking forward to it. Edmonton was crazy. It was rowdy up there. Full support, and that building was loud, but... we're going to have about 20,000 strong in our own arena tonight, and it's going to be jumping. And it's been a long time battling to get here. You went there last year. You got a little bit more experienced team, a little bit more depth. It got tested, and when you do lose the game, all of a sudden the pendulum and pressure does swing back towards the Panthers.
We're talking to Bill Lindsay, former NHLer and Panthers color analyst. Bill, you've been through the thick and thin moments of this organization, including watching Bobrovsky come in as a $10 million goalie and struggle, and then watching him turn into this machine during the playoffs, loses a big one Saturday night. You've seen the good and the bad of this guy. I mean, what do you expect out of him tonight?
A big bounce back performance. It turned at the first 3 years, it was the worst contract in the league. Now it's the best contract in the league. So Bobrovsky is able to turn it around, and that's kind of been the story for him. It's water off a duck's back for a veteran goaltender. He got pulled. The whole team was sloppy. It just ended up that he got a little bit extra rest. Paul Maurice was fine with that. Just doesn't really matter at this point. Every game takes on a life of its own, and that's where you're happy to have a veteran like Bobrovsky. He goes through the same type of preparation. The mental fortitude has been established over time. He does a lot of work with it's the same with the goaltending coach, Rob Tallis. He's able to get himself dialed in, and part of that is the team in front of him. It has to be a full team experience. Bobrovsky, when it's coming down 3-on-2s, 2-on-1s, and it's the best players in the world, I don't care how good your goaltender is, your chances of getting lit up, probably pretty good. So the Panthers have to be better in front of Bobrovsky, and I expect Bobrovsky to be clear-minded and mentally sharp. He has that kind of ability to refocus.
So let's say the Florida Panthers win the Stanley Cup and the Conn Smythe is handed to Connor McDavid. He's nearly the highest point total ever in the playoffs, most assists in the postseason. Would that be an injustice to Barkov or Bobrovsky?
No, that's fine. We'll take the hardware.
I love it.
You won MVP, it's fine to go down. And it could be deserving if we win the game 4-3 and Connor McDavid has a goal and two assists. It's a very valid point that Connor McDavid could be the playoff MVP.
Right.
That's how good his playoffs has been. He's been able to drag Edmonton this far into the fight and his leadership capabilities. So he's one of the front runners. But if you have the hardware at the end, I don't think any player on the other, if the Panthers, if it was Barkov that got it or Bobrovsky, they could care less on their own team, even if it went to the other team. If you're running around and holding that trophy over your head and you get a Stanley Cup at the end of the day and a ring, that's all you ever want or dream of as a player.
Bill, one of the aspects of this series we thought would come into play is a power play when you consider all the talent here, and it really hasn't here. What have you seen out of the Florida Panthers, in particular maybe Reinhardt, who's so good on it, but they haven't had much success?
Yeah, they've been able to push. It's a very aggressive mindset. Same thing with Edmonton, what they've done. Both the power plays have been very ineffective. It's just pressure-orientated. Anytime that there's a back turn, you're going to go after the guy, puck carrier, backhand. If it's on the backhand, pressure, and see if you can break it down. The only way to do that is with eccentric, quick puck movement, and we just haven't been able to see either team kind of establish that. The goaltending at times, as Sergei Bobrovsky, has been a real good penalty killer at times for the Panthers. There has been chances for the Edmonton power play, but it's been led by Carolina over the years and the way penalty killing has changed. And if you do get the clears, it's 20 seconds for these guys that go out there and it's off the ice. And if you get some clears, you're going through a four or five rotation in a 2-minute power play on the penalty killers. So if your power play is not humming and working at the same level and competing at the same level as the penalty killers, you're in for some trouble. So you have to be able to match that. Connor McDavid said, it just has to be more of a 5-on-5 mentality for us. And I guess that could be the same could be said for the Panthers. Just focus like a 5-on-5 and go out there and work your tail off and try and match the intensity, and hopefully you can find a break.
Do you what do you think the injury status is for the Panthers? Do you think there's a handful of guys dealing with this impactful injuries right now?
I think we're pretty cleaned up for the most part. Yeah, there's some bumps and bruises. I'm not sure. You've seen some knee-on-knee hits or whatever they are, but they seem fine to come back. There hasn't been much talk around the dressing room. This is much different than last year against Vegas, where they had duct tape. They were piecing shoulders together, trying to keep ankles intact with the boots. And we're deeper this year. It looks like Lomberg might draw into the lineup. That's the luxury Paul Maurice has. With that fourth line, there's some flexibility down there. He can kind of change it, get fresh players in, kind of energize that. And even with the top nine with the rotation, you've seen Tarasenko on the top line. You've seen Rodriguez on the top line, Verhaeghe. He can bounce and mix and match there and kind of find it suitable. But the injury update from the Panthers, compared to last year, there's not much talk at all. Everyone's banged up at this time of year. There's bumps and bruises, but I think that's just the majority of it for the Panthers.
Well, Bill, we'll wait and see what happens tonight. Could be an historic night in South Florida. If that's the case, enjoy it. We'll see what happens. But we could also be talking about Game 6. So we'll see how it all plays out. But we really appreciate your time, man. Thanks for doing this.
All right, Kipper. All right, thanks. All the best, guys.
That's Bill Lindsay.
It.
Thanks so much. Appreciate your time.
Flyers
Thank
color
you.
Analyst.
All right.
Panthers. Was I say Flyers?
We've been talking Flyers a lot.
Wow,
today.
We're talking about the comeback, I guess. The Flyer comeback. Panthers.
Yeah. you know, he doesn't buy my injury theory, so that's good. That's good for the Panthers. Yeah. Having 3 days off really helps them. Do you actually
think that Connor? No.
I am. Oh, I'm back.
Oh, do I think McDavid
will
win the Conn
Smythe? Do you actually think McDavid can win the Conn Smythe?
Well, no, I don't think he'll win it. But so right now, most points in a postseason NHL history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, Wayne Gretzky, Connor McDavid. Fifth all time right now.
Mm-hmm.
Most assists in NHL history in a playoff.
For Connor McDavid to win a Conn Smythe and lose the Stanley Cup, it has to go seven games.
And Connor would also smash it on Bill Daly's head or whoever would hand it out.
You can't win it when your team loses game five.
Was it Elias Pettersson that threw his gold medal or his silver medal into the crowd at the World Juniors? Yeah, that would have been, that'd be McDavid with the Conn Smythe.
McDavid would murder someone with it.
Can you lose in five games your Stanley Cup final and win the Conn Smythe?
Great point by you.
No.
When you're blanked, or what do you have, one assist in the first two games or maybe two assists in the first three games? Yeah. Not enough. Not enough to be a losing team Conn Smythe winner.
Who was the last one to do it?
Jaguar.
Yeah.
And before that, Hextall?
Was it?
I thought maybe it was only Jaguar.
Hextall did it as a Philadelphia Flyer, losing Game 7, which
they're twice a goalie.
You're okay with that?
There's five players have done it.
Shows what I know.
Roger Croce. Croce, thank you. Don't know that one.
Sure, that's what I was going to say.
1966.
I think I'm older than you.
Glenn Hall in 68. Reggie Leach in 76. Ron Hextall in 87. And, Jean-Sebastien Jaguar
there you
in
go.
2003. Those are the five guys that have done it.
The award is playoff MVP. It's hard to make a case that someone's been better than McDavid, but no one wants to see someone.
I remember Jaguar was undeniably amazing and clearly the MVP.
You're not splitting up equal parts in the first, second, third, and fourth round. You are putting probably 30-40% stock in your
final exam is worth 60% of your letter grade.
Yes. That's what
I'm familiar with that.
So I don't know how everybody feels, but there's tremendous stock in this in the final.
Yep, you're right. And so Bob giving up, five goals last game hurts his case, but he's good enough in the first three that he's the front runner by a good distance.
All right. Couple of house cleaning news and notes. Barkley Goodrow. The Rangers have got him on waivers today. And I really like this player. Yeah. I really think that there's a couple of options for some clubs here if he becomes available.
Let's talk about what his situation is.
He's got 2 years, three years left at 3.6. We all knew when the Rangers signed him, like many in free agency, he got overpay.
Yeah.
He was overpaid.
Two-time cup winner who is clutch in the postseason for Tampa Bay.
Clutch for the Rangers this year.
This year, he had 4 goals in 80 games. And in the playoffs, he had 6 goals in 16 games.
Including multiple massive ones. Overtime winner against Florida. Mm-hmm. I think he scored another big one in one of their games.
But you know what? Teams are smart now.
Yeah.
So the two scenarios I see.
Yeah. By the way, he's 31.
Okay, 31. Which I think is in a great wheelhouse. Two scenarios I see is that he gets claimed by a team like San Jose or Chicago.
I'd bet anything someone claims him.
So
why wouldn't you? If you're San Jose, I mean, like he's a professional.
How about
hockey
Chicago?
Player.
Can we get more hockey players on our team?
They've got Nick Foligno there, so they've already committed to
they're
three
paying
or four
Corey
million.
Perry $4 million too. They've got room for another overpaid old guy.
Listen, I won't debate that.
Okay.
I just think it's less of a possibility with a Nick Foligno already.
Mm-hmm.
But like San Jose, why wouldn't you bring in a two-time Stanley Cup champion?
We just read a quote where they don't care about, they just want good guys. They don't care if their players are good, right?
But, okay, that's one scenario. And the other scenario is he gets bought out, and any team can take a crack at him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like,
he probably gets 3.6 as a free agent.
You know, Sammy, you're Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
At, what do you think you get him for now?
I don't know, but I have him for $2 million.
It feels kind of like Ryan's Suter got bought out by
He's going to go somewhere else and be
just got
for
way more money
more
again.
Years, yeah.
Although he wasn't very good this year, but that was 4 years that he's been in Dallas.
Right.
Like
he's been there a long time now.
I do feel like there would be teams that would sign up to sign him for a little less than that, but maybe the Leafs, sure. honestly, I'm very open to any ideas when it comes to the Leafs. If they like him and he's
this is the start of the type of deal that scares me for the Leafs, where Dubas is gone, Keefe is gone. You bring in Berube, now it's like bringing the older fourth line. Bring in Matt Martin. Bring him back. Bring me, you know, and all of a sudden you're that team again. You know, like that's it scares me a bit.
Mm-hmm. At least it's different from that other team.
Well, and that's it.
They keep losing in the first round.
Sure. Yeah, and you're not wrong. It's different.
The other team really just lit it up in the playoffs. So. Yeah.
All right.
That was the team that sent who to the All-Star game? Was it?
Leo Komarov.
Komarov.
All right.
That's
right. Let's take it out to Calgary.
Oh, yeah.
Craig Conroy says Markstrom has not asked for a trade.
Inspired by the Real Kipper and Bourne hour yesterday where we talked about how he's going to want to trade.
He didn't ask for one.
He has never come out and said he wants out. That's never been mentioned. He's never said that.
That's like when my wife says the garbage needs to go out. She doesn't ask me to do it, but it's pretty clear what needs to be done.
Could someone else look like they could use some water?
Yeah.
Could someone else close to him?
She didn't ask me to do it.
Could someone else close to him have asked?
Yeah.
But I don't understand like how you can throw this comment out from Craig Conroy when you know that he was upset.
He didn't get traded.
That it was not handled very well upstairs. I can't remember the actual quote,
but it was basically that.
Something like that.
That it wasn't handled very well from upstairs.
So while we can appreciate you saying as if everything's hunky-dory, we know it's not.
You're right. To me, this is an attempt to reclaim leverage in a trade where you're not dealing Markstrom from a position of Markstrom wants out. You're dealing Markstrom because you've offered me a lot. And you remember the other side of that is New Jersey had some quotes slightly resentful about how basically, Conroy tried to put him over a barrel and extort them for assets. And, you know.
Yeah, and the theory is that they had a deal done and then Calgary changed the deal. That's what's out there.
Mm. Not great. Not great to go back and do that.
Do you expect him to be gone by the end of the summer?
I expect us to do a show and him have been traded before we go on hiatus this summer.
Okay.
In 2 weeks.
Oh, that early.
Yeah.
Like at the draft kind of thing? Yeah.
I just get it done. You know, if it's going to happen, that's when people are talking trades. Mm-hmm. Make it happen.
Pascal Vincent dealt a tough hand there in Columbus.
Yeah, has anyone got less of a fair shake than Pascal Vincent in Columbus? They're like, yeah, Babs has been fired. You're the head coach.
We suck.
We got no players. You did poorly. You're fired. What?
When you keep watching all these scenarios in Columbus, like who would want to go there?
It's a great question.
There's a lot of people who want to be the head coach of an NHL team, but you're not attracting.
But you're desperate now. You're saying I'll take my chances on being, I don't know, treated this way than obviously not getting a job anywhere else. But it's not ideal.
Could this not be an opening for someone like Claude Julien or Bruce Boudreau, who you're saying, yeah, maybe these guys are at the tail end, but we need an experienced guy who's a name.
No one's turning down an NHL job.
No.
We get that, especially probably Bruce Boudreau, who wants to get in so badly.
They should hire Ken Hitchcock.
What's that?
See if Doug can get Ken Hitchcock in there.
All of
another
our
tour in Columbus.
You just want to get rid of all of our guests? Gabby, Hitchin, and Claude, you want them all gone?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Not particularly.
No, I...
New Sharks head coach Ryan Warsawski looks to bring light to the struggling franchise. He thinks the team has been beat down, dragged through the ringer, and he wants to keep it light.
He's 36 years old. I've got ties.
Child.
My age.
I've got ties.
That's my age. He's 36. He's 88.
I've got Sportsnet ties almost.
Yeah, that old.
Yeah. 36.
Yeah.
Imagine me stepping behind the bench.
So he's the guy to bring lightness. He's not beaten down like you and
and bitter.
Yeah, he's still yet to have the bitterness built into him that life does to all of us.
I don't know. He gets to tell players older than him they got to go to bed early at 11.
Love that. I love setting curfews at 36-year-old. Logan Couture, get to bed.
Oilers?
Overtime game is all I'm calling. It's going to overtime.
I can't see the Florida team that I've watched all season long blow this opportunity. So yeah. We'll see what happens. I gladly watch it, though.
5-2 Cats.
I'll gladly watch it. All right. Our thanks to Claude Julien and Bill Lindsay. Enjoy your game 5 tonight.
On Sportsnet.
On Sportsnet. And let's hope for a game 6. Why not, eh?
Yes, sir.